handoff, Adrian on second and one. Stutter steps to the left, runs for the first down to the five, and he struts into the end zone. John Brown, 45-40. Shoot by Munderland, inside the 30, 20, 10, touchdown! Caught Michael Floyd, 30, 25, 20, inside the 15, and into the end zone, touchdown. Teddy takes the snap, looks out to the right, swings it to the left, man wide open, touchdown Vikings!
Bridgewater steps up, gets hit, the ball's fumbled, it's loose at the 37-yard line, the Cardinals recover it.
Dwight Freeney with another big play in what should be a Hall of Fame career, forces the sack, sends the team of the Around the NFL podcast to the playoffs. Arizona Cardinals beat Minnesota 23-20 on another entertaining Thursday night football game. I'm Greg Rosenthal. I'm here with Chris Wesseling, the mailman. We are going to get to Dan Hansis and Mark and Amber Theo Harris and preview all the Week 14 games. But first, Cardinals, tough time on Thursday night, but they pull it out.
Yeah, I think they're the deepest team in the league, but this game was all about their star power. Carson Palmer breaks Kurt Warner's single-season franchise record for touchdowns. Larry Fitzgerald welcomes Viking safety Anthony Harris to the NFL with a brutal pancake block that springs Michael Floyd for a 42-yard touchdown.
That's the block of the year.
Block of the year. Floyd goes over 100 yards for the fourth time in five games. On the other side of the ball, Calais Campbell dominates the line of scrimmage. Tyrann Mathieu is blitzing as a menace on runs and passes. Patrick Peterson shuts down Stephon Diggs. Really a star-powered performance for the Cardinals.
Well, you say they're defined by their depth, and I totally agree. For instance, guys like Tony Jefferson had a big play on Thursday night, but it's the depth of star power. I mean, how many teams have that many guys that the rest of the country knows? And if they don't know Calais Campbell, they should, because he's great. All of those guys can win the game on a couple plays. And Dwight Freeney is not a guy you really expect to do that at this point. The Cardinals don't really have a one-on-one pass rusher that's consistent. That's why they're 25th in sacks, despite blitzing more than just about any team in the league. But when it came down to it, he beats Matt Khalil on a play that a lot of people probably believe Mike Zimmer and the Vikings should not have run. 13 seconds left. Do you think they should have just kicked a field goal right there and tried to send it into overtime?
I do. With an inexperienced quarterback, I think the chance of a turnover is just too great. If I had Carson Palmer or a similar style veteran quarterback, I have no problem with a third down pass in that situation.
Yeah, and they talked to him. I mean, they said basically you can't take a sack, you can't leave it in the middle of the field. And at first I thought that's not really on Bridgewater, but then when you rewatch the play, he does have enough time to get rid of it, sense the pressure. He does double pump a little bit, and it's unfortunate because I think Teddy Bridgewater played a really strong game. He showed a lot of the attributes that we really liked from him last year in terms of poise and his heady play, and I think it was his best game since week two.
Set a career high with 335 passing yards. I thought he really dealt with the blitz well, and he seemed to see the field better than he has in weeks.
Well, let's be honest. We thought the Vikings were going to get steamrolled here.
It was a good performance from them.
They played like a team, I think, that needed the win more. 8-4 coming off the most embarrassing performance they had all year by far, and I think they responded really well, and they could have won this game. They had three fumbles. One of them by Adrian Peterson on a reverse that really slowed one drive's momentum. They were able to move the ball well all night. They ended up about tied in total yardage with the Cardinals, but they couldn't finish drives.
Yeah, and I think it's impressive that the Cardinals now have 11 wins in back-to-back seasons for the first time in their history, and they've been around as long as any franchise in the NFL.
That's
1920. Bruce Arians said after the game, when the records start falling, the season speaks for itself. To me, the one hesitation I have is that the same problems that kind of started to rear their head in September are still there. A lot of missed opportunities. The David Johnson drop on the goal line caused them to have a field goal instead of a touchdown. Carson Palmer gets pushed out of field goal range with a sack. And then a third down throw that Larry Fitzgerald almost made a spectacular catch on would have sealed the victory. Instead, the Vikings are allowed to try for the game tying drive. So those problems and the fact that you mentioned earlier, they don't have a one-on-one pass rusher. They have to blitz too much. So those problems are kind of, you know, they won the game. They're 11-2. They're the most well-balanced team in the NFL, but there are a couple issues that could get them.
Yeah, they're the only team that's a top five offense and defense. They're finding ways to win games even when they're not at their very best. And I give more credit to Minnesota, I really do, in this game than I do worry about the Cardinals. I was impressed with Minnesota's effort because really from the first minute of the game, they were in it. Their lines, for the most part, played pretty well. Adrian Peterson looked insanely good on that first drive and then really didn't do much the rest of the game. So you have to give credit to Campbell for shutting him down. But these were just two teams that I think now the Vikings have to feel good that at least they could maybe take care of business in their next couple of weeks against the Bears and the Giants. And if they win both those games, they should be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's an encouraging game for the Vikings. Even with the loss, you're playing without your three best defensive players, and Teddy Bridgewater has his best game since probably September. So that's encouraging. And then for the Cardinals, my favorite part of the game was Red Bryant, who was just signed off the street 2 weeks ago, was really rallying the defensive troops, was the leader. And then you take a guy like Dwight Freeney, who was also signed off the street in October. To me, the Cardinals are picking up these leaders, anticipating a Super Bowl.
That's a cool team. I mean, we hit a home run picking this as the team of the Around the NFL podcast. They can clinch the NFC West if the Seahawks happen to lose on Sunday. If not, they'll try to clinch next week. That's the Thursday night game. Let's preview the rest of the week 14 games and send it over to Dan.
The Around the NFL podcast never touches an official.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I agree with that drop. That is accurate.
I thought it was heading towards something maybe a little rude, like, never, like, saw a girl or something. I thought it was going to head towards that, down that road, which, you know, would have been rude, but it wasn't. I don't even remember what it was anymore. What was
it? Well, we've never touched an official, according to Matt Money Smith, which is true for me. I don't know about Greg and Wes.
I've never physically assaulted an official.
You've just touched them, though?
I'd like to get in the same room with the competition committee.
I did ask Dean Blandino a question from about a foot or two away, but I don't think we shook hands or anything, so I don't think I've touched.
Connor Orr and I talked with Dean Blandino for about an hour at the owners' meetings.
An hour?
If I could have been a fly on that
long
wall,
time.
Let me tell you.
Great guy, actually.
Dino Blandino?
I will say that. It's not going to be a popular thing to say, but he couldn't have been
friendlier. It's been a tough year for Dino.
Couldn't have been friendlier.
Because he's in a tough spot now.
He's in a very tough spot.
When they started having Dino on, it felt real and felt transparent, but now that since the rules – you know, we're under assault, the officials. He's now become the face of that.
Hold on, Dan. Shadowy league officials.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. I think Dean is doing a great job.
Yeah, I think I was on party line there.
I think Dean is doing the best. He's got a bad situation.
Tough spot right now.
You explain the catch rule every week. Exactly. That's got to be the hardest job in sports.
A big show coming up today. It is our Thursday, late Thursday, early Friday preview show. You just heard at the top, Wes and Rosenthal. They call them the Wes and Rosenthal team. That's the name.
Catchy.
talk to you about the Thursday night football matchup between the Vikings and the Cardinals. So we got that one done. But we have 32 teams, 16 games. One's been played, 15 to talk about. I can't get that wrong.
No, the math is going to be the same the rest of the season. Although
it's going to get tricky in the playoffs.
Although there is no Thursday night game in Week 17, and we got a couple Saturday night games coming up. But that's
I'm already sweating thinking about it. By the way, I just want to say, Greg, off the top, we got a couple things we got to talk about in the show, Greg.
Wow.
But one thing, because I listened to our last show when we were talking about embarrassing singles purchases and how we were in the trust tree, and not to, you know, keep it real, we won't make fun of each other. Upon further review, the Cyrus thing was a little lame because that was kind of hipstery, actually.
I was just trying to give you an extra one because I thought you guys wouldn't like it or whatever, that it was embarrassing.
Came across as boastful almost.
Exactly. It was like, you know.
Fine. Then I could have just stuck with Duran, which was fine.
Yeah, you did offer us a late period.
It's the one that I've been made fun of the most in my house, that's for sure. My wife has not been in a no-shame zone. She has shamed me for that one many times.
Well, you've been through a lot.
Well, you guys are even now since Greg lampooned your live selection right off the bat.
Well, and that's right. I kept it real. I gave like five examples. All of them were embarrassing, maybe except for Garden State, but even Garden State.
Garden State's great. Yeah, see, you did the same thing.
You just turned it around and made it, you know, look at me, I'm a cool hipster music.
How is that a cool hipster? No one thinks. Like,
this progressive Miley Ray Cyrus 36-year-old track.
36-year-old dorky white guy listens to Miley Cyrus in car. What a cool guy.
In car. In car. In car.
Got the windows up cranking.
For the record, I was embarrassed for Greg that he owns.
See, exactly.
Album.
What?
I'm speaking to the younger audience. You've lost touch.
What I mean, what are we talking about? You're saying that you
how
are
is live even
youth
embarrassing
culture?
If no one's even ever heard of
Greg
him
climbing up the common man rankings again,
getting your strawberry truck. So yeah, we got all the games to get to. We're gonna have a guest, a first time guest, Amber Theo Harris from NFL Network will stop by and preview a couple of games. So let's get to it, boys. You want to talk about some football games?
Oh yeah.
All right, let's do it. Let's start with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Really, you know, if you want to talk about flavor of the week right now, and I guess deservedly so, you can say everyone very high on the Steelers as not just a team that is going to claim a playoff spot, but could do some real damage in the postseason if and when they get there. They head to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. The Bengals have a chance at 10-2 to clinch the AFC North with a win, but the Steelers at 7-5 need this game, so there's a level of I'm going to say a little desperation involved. Going 7-6 in the AFC playoff picture is a very tough road to sled if you get to that point. So the Steelers need this game. The Bengals could probably survive without it. And then you factor in Chris Wessling, Ben Roethlisberger playing at an absolute monster level.
Greg and I were tweeting about this the other night. I was up late and rewatching the Colts Steelers game because we do the podcast while the Sunday night game is on. And Big Ben, I know Greg has said nobody's playing better than Russell Wilson, but Ben's right there with him. This is the hottest offense the NFL has seen since the 1982 Air Coryell Chargers with Dan Fouts, Wes Chandler, Charlie Joyner, all those guys. But
loved watching those guys.
Who was that last guy?
I was three.
I believe they had John Jefferson. They had Chuck Muntz.
No, the other guy, Wes.
Wes Chandler.
Could this offense be any more explosive? Friends
nice
joke.
Friends, Chandler Bing, got it.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I think
Mark just not a fan, even though he was a big Friends guy. I just thought you would be a little more
not supported. A big Friends guy, and joke. I like Friends. I like one or two members quite a bit, but I'm not. I wouldn't call myself a huge fan of the show. I don't think I've watched an episode. In
you
like
are you
six
are the
years.
Only Phoebe diehard I know.
That's true.
Love her.
All right, let's get back to the game.
Well, I think Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant, we've said this before, the most dynamic duo in the league. And then Marcus Wheaton finally developing a rapport with Big Ben. He had been among the biggest enigmas in the league. 250 yards, 12 catches, and two touchdowns over the past 2 weeks.
It's almost unfair if he develops into the guy that they thought he could be. If you add him into the mix and all three of those guys are healthy, as is Big Ben, who's going to stop him? Who's going to cover? I don't care what secondary, I don't care what defense you are, even if you're the Broncos, how are you going to cover these guys?
Well, it reminds me of their former coordinator's team, the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, they've in the last couple of years have added even more weapons on top of their previous weapons. And what about D'Angelo Williams? You thought, without Le'Veon Bell, the Steelers are going to lose their most dynamic player outside of Big Ben, and it's going to freeze their run game, and he's such a great pass catcher. D'Angelo Williams has been awesome.
He caused Chris Collinsworth to involuntarily yell, wow, on back-to-back plays Sunday night.
And he has been incredible. On the same day in this offseason, C.J. Spiller and D'Angelo Williams were signed, and you would have never guessed that C.J. Spiller would be behind Tim Hightower on the depth chart, while D'Angelo Williams is a legitimate top 10 running back right now. Maybe he's got a great burst. Maybe his long speed isn't as good as when he was in his mid-20s, but I don't really even know
that. Yeah, but as you said, he's wildly patient.
Right. He waits. He is. The offensive line gets credit, but they shouldn't get all the credit. Some of the plays where Collinsworth said, wow, there is a free rusher right at D'Angelo Williams. That has nothing to do with the offensive line, and he makes that first guy miss. He has been outrageously good. And you mentioned no secondary can cover this team. This Bengals secondary is banged up, and I think that's trouble.
How about this? The entire around the NFL team, all five of us, not Greg. Greg quit on us.
I would take the Steelers.
The burlap sack of shame for Greg. We all picked the Steelers. Fan consensus has the Cincinnati Bengals, but we believe the Steelers will tighten up the AFC North.
I will take the Steelers for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I took the Steelers, and I feel pretty good about their offense, but I know this isn't my role, but we disrespect the Bengals way too much on this
podcast.
Yeah,
we do.
Well, and by the way, also their defense.
None of us even had them in the playoffs before the
I know. And we love the Steelers every time we have a chance to love the Steelers.
And Michael Berger, who's been on our show before, you said this game doesn't necessarily mean that much to the Bengals. He thought it's their biggest regular season game of his lifetime.
Well, they have to prove they can beat this.
Which is a fan type of thing to say, but I know what he means. They really desperately want that bye, and they desperately do not want to lose a home game to the Steelers.
All right, good luck, Berger. You know?
Well, you're saying it doesn't matter.
No, it does. Let's move on. The Atlanta Falcons free falling out into nothing. Head to Charlotte to face the Panthers. The Falcons once upon a time were 5-0. Now they are 6-6 and need to make some things happen to avoid an embarrassing collapse out of the playoff picture. The Panthers, of course, 12-0. And Greg, I know you are a big Matt Ryan fan, but when it comes down to it, he doesn't have the weapons, and the Panthers are just too good to lose this game, right?
There's no reason to think that the Panthers are going to have their letdown in this week. I think it made sense on some level that a couple bad things go against them, against the Saints, and you're in the Superdome, and Drew Brees makes a couple plays in the second half. I can't see the Falcons being overly competitive in this game. I don't think Matt Ryan's been as bad as you make him out to be. Play to play. He keeps having these back-breaking picks at the end of games, which everyone's going to remember, especially when they see the highlights. I mean, he's been fine. He just hasn't been a difference maker in a positive way at all for them.
They just don't look extremely comfortable in this offense. But that Bucs game, I didn't watch it till recently, and I came out after our last podcast thinking they must have been terrible, and they really just came within a play where they couldn't tackle Jameis Winston of probably winning that game.
Well, that's every week. That's every week.
No, they've been in all these games, but they're not a terrible football team. They're probably just a 7-9, 8-8 type.
I think they're a 6-6 team, and it's just they've approached it a really weird way that's made them look bad. But really, they're kind of where they should be.
There was a 3-play sequence last week where I thought was telling for Matt Ryan's season. Julio Jones slips on a ball that would have gone for a first down. They throw deep to Jacob Tammy, who is one of the most slowest moving tight ends in the league, and then their small school sixth-round pick or whatever, Justin Hardy can't come up with a possession receiver ball on third down that really just landed in his hands. This is who Matt Ryan's working with right now. When a slow-moving tight end is your second-best target, you're not going to do much on offense.
It seems like his third option every play is Patrick DeMarco.
Right, and O'Brien Schofield's like the most dynamic player in their front seven.
This is what we said going into the season. They really only have four or five above-average starters on the entire roster.
Connor Orr is, you know, he's part of our picks. And we have another group within the newsroom that we, as a group, go against picks head-to-head. And the winner has to buy dinner and drinks at the end of the season. It is the what's the name of that group?
Well, the
Ladies of Long Form.
Oh, they don't like to be called that.
Well, they create our long-form content, and then you throw in John Marvel, who oversees that, and he's part of the
Shadowy
group.
League.
The
original content team is what I was looking for.
I thought you were looking
for. Or there. Call them that if you want. How about that?
Anyway, Connor Orr has picked against the Panthers 11 out of 12 weeks this season.
How's that going for
him? He's an idiot.
And he could cost us dinner and drinks, so we might have to – talk.
Did he pick him against them this week, too?
Yeah, he picked him against them again.
This Panthers offense is putting up – people now don't even notice. This putting up 500 yards a game. Suddenly the offense is almost as explosive and dominant as the defense.
They're phenomenal.
It's not a good pick by Connor, buried in last week.
This isn't the week the Panthers are going to lose. I wouldn't think so.
Yeah. All right, moving on. The Washington Redskins coming off a dispiriting home loss to the Cowboys on Monday night. Now travel to Soldier Field for a game against the Bears. 2-5-7 teams, Mark Sessler. The Redskins have a lot to play for. The Bears basically need to win out and hope for a miracle. Your thoughts on this game?
Well, I mean, we got the Redskins team that allowed the entire, system to collapse upon them on Monday night. So they'll win this game. That's what they do. They flip-flop wins. And yeah, I mean, with Washington, I don't know what do you say about the team at this point?
I think
there's nothing consistent to say about them because it doesn't translate from week to week.
I sort of disagree. I think they're the most consistent team in the NFC. They are what they are.
What is a most consistent team in the NFC East?
It's a team that tries to go on these long drives, has struggles to get the running game going each week. You pretty much know what you have in Kirk Cousins. He's mostly limiting mistakes, but he's not going to make any throws that beats you. It's a average defense, and they're a 6-7 win type of team. I guess what I mean is like
that's just mediocre.
But they're more or less the same team every week. Now they get blown out by good teams and they win some big games against some bad teams where things go their way. But that game against the Cowboys, I guess my point is I don't think it was unrepresentative of who they are as a team.
Well, I don't think we're saying that. I think that's just that you can't count on them to be the same thing every week. I don't know. That's my opinion. I feel that they overachieve some weeks, and then the next week they can't handle a game they should absolutely win.
You could say that about every NFC East team.
Yeah,
exactly.
The Bears, gold standard's cousin, Eddie Goldman, second-round pick, nose tackle, 2 sacks last week, was crashing the pocket the whole game, blocked an extra point, building block for Vic Fangio's defense.
Well, if he watches, and obviously he will, that Cowboys game, I mean, they really sent a lot of blitzes at Kirk Cousins. He did not handle them very well. I saw some criticism that Cousins was not changing the play enough at the line of scrimmage. So you would think that Fangio, who loves to be creative, is going to make things hard on an offensive line that's been pretty bad. And this offense has been pretty bad. That touchdown they scored was the first touchdown they had scored in almost 90 minutes. Oh. Of action.
How about this?
In a game and a half, they had 6 points.
Kirk Cousins is not a terrible quarterback. I mean, he's a middle of the road type guy, but you got to pair him with a running game to have a shot.
Yes.
And Alfred Morris and Matt Jones, two guys you would think would team up to be a good tandem, averaging 3.5 yards a carry between the two of them. Alfred Morris hasn't even scored a touchdown. Matt Jones has 3. I mean, this is not a running. They're not getting the compliment in the running game, and you're putting too much on Kirk Cousins. It's not a good recipe for success.
They want to be a ground and pound team, but they don't have the offensive line. Or the
system Trent,
to pull it off.
Trent Williams is a Pro Bowl left tackle, but the other 4 spots are a problem.
Wes, you took the Redskins. The rest of us took the Bears. Nailed it. Home run. Jogging around the bases. Everyone happy. Moving on, the next 1 p.m. game, the San Francisco 49ers travel to Cleveland to face the Browns. The Browns, of course, 2-10. Not much cooking there. The Niners 4-8, two teams playing out the string, coaches trying to keep their jobs. Not a lot to say about this game. I will tell you something happened if you want to get excited. A couple things. First of all, Johnny Manziel playing, so it gives the game a little juice. He had a quote this week: "I was forced to learn a hard lesson." Mark, how many times have we heard a quote like that from Johnny Manziel since last May?
That's his version of accountability.
And you're not
well,
impressed.
It is.
You're not impressed by it, Mark?
Why should I be? That's not at all being accountable. I mean, I don't want to. You know what? I think we've said everything on Tuesday and this week that we need to say about Johnny.
Yeah, we'll talk about Johnny on Sunday night.
Mark has reached the point. He is tired of this story. At one point yesterday, Austin, our editor on the desk,
nice man,
suggested a Manziel post of, you know, because different parts of his quotes came out that made him look bad. And at that point, Mark was just like, I've had it. I'm through with writing about
Well, someone else can have their take put out there. I've already written about this guy 755, 8 times at this point.
The biggest news to come out of Cleveland on Thursday, tight end Gary Bonage signed a 3-year extension with the Browns, keeping the veteran tight end in business with Cleveland. This is great news.
Well, I'll say this. Go look at what Jordan Cameron's doing in Miami, and then you ask who's playing the better.
I'll tell you, of all the bad
Jordan
things.
Jordan Cameron is not having a good season, and Barnage has been dynamic for Cleveland.
I'm Gary Barnage. When the Browns called, I thought they was taking a piss, but they were serious. Mega, mate. Call me mum straight away. Mega deal by the Browns. Mega. I'm mad for it. I'm the richest bloke I know. Over the moon. Know what I mean? I'm quids in, mate. I'm quids in.
I don't know what that means, but Gary Barnage on pace to, I believe, break the Browns' tight end record set by Ozzie Newsome for most receiving yards in a season.
Not a bad deal either. The report was it could be north of $12 million for 3 years, so that's That's a very low
quids in
salary
right.
for a starting tight end. So
he's barely making more than Dwayne Bowe.
Right. No, he's making a lot less. I mean, he won't make more. He'll make in 3 years what Dwayne Bowe makes in one.
Going to the boozer, collecting Johnny Manziel, going on a piss, going to get legless. I'm quids in, mate.
Getting legless, huh?
Getting legless.
Oh, I get it. You think this is a good move because you can keep this bit going a couple more years. I get it.
Gary Barnage was going to sign a big deal. We need to get Gary Barnage on the podcast.
He's not going to sound anything like you think he sounds.
Well, we just to make sure, first of all, because I need to hear it. I know it's, quote-unquote, he's from Kentucky or something. Don't buy it.
Bowling Green.
And if he is indeed American, I want to hear his accent.
Well, we sit near someone who's quite close with him. Right, so
Fabiano said he's buddies with him. He's like, oh, you guys ever talk to Gary? Great guy.
Yeah, but Fabs, and I love Fabs. I sit next to him. He's a nice guy. But Fabs is one of those guys that says everybody's his buddy. So I don't know if it's actually true or not.
Yeah.
What? I mean,
they have.
Listen,
get ready for the
ladies.
Snitches on Twitter.
That's not what that is about. I'm just.
They have hosted events together. They do have a genuine relationship, from what I can tell on Twitter.
Moving on. Mark and I both picked the Browns to win with Johnny Manziel. We'll see how that turns out.
Blaine Gabbert's best quarterback in this game.
Very true. Moving on, the Indianapolis Colts are 6-6, tied with the Texans atop the wretched AFC South. They now get the Jacksonville Jaguars. They got to travel. Nobody likes to go to the Evergreen Bank Field in a big game, in a big spot in December. I mean, that's one thing I do know from watching football. If Jacksonville has any hope of staying in this race, they need to win, get to 5-8, and then hope some really bad stuff happens ahead of them. So, yes, that is a must-win for the Jaguars. And the Colts, listen, I think the Jags are going to win this game, and the reason I do is because I think the Matt Hasselbeck storyline has been a little bit phony on some level.
What do you mean?
I don't think that he's actually a good quarterback. I think he's old. Is he even playing this week?
I agree with Dan on this one.
The wheels are about to fall off the Hasselbeck train, and I'm saying it's going to happen in Jacksonville.
Yeah, but I thought Hasselbeck's game against the Steelers was one of the worst quarterback games of anyone all year. And this is the right defense to solve that problem, because look what Phillip Rivers and Marcus Mariota have done the last 2 weeks. Two of the best games by any quarterbacks.
I mean, I don't think Hasselbeck's been healthy, number one. He's playing through.
He's old. Well, old
he's
guys
old.
Get hurt all the time.
He was playing great before last week. And I say great, he was doing his job. That's why I don't think it's a phony story. Yes, he's not the best quarterback in the league, but he did as well as you possibly could have expected, and he was terrible.
As this AFC South race gets closer and closer to giving birth to like a 7-9 division winner, I want the Texans to win this division because they're more interesting on both sides of the ball. The Colts are boring.
They are.
I'm going to leave it right there.
Especially
they are
without
boring
Andrew Luck.
To watch. Well, yes, of
They'll
course. But they were boring with Andrew Luck this season.
That's true.
And their defense is one of the most faceless groups in the entire league. Kendall Langford is their most consistent player in their front seven, which is not a good sign. And Vontae Davis, who is one of those cornerbacks who, when he's really good, like he's really, really good, top five, but he's having just an okay year. I mean, he's not killing them, but he's not having that season when we talked about him as one of the best players in the league. He's not been a huge difference maker.
Are you going to be able to make it to Indianapolis for, you know.
The combine?
No, for Frank Gore's funeral.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
You picked the wrong week to say that. One of his best games of the year looked great last week against Pittsburgh.
Oh, really?
Clearly did not watch the game.
When he averaged 3.5 yards a carry?
He had 95 total yards. You watched that. He
got outplayed by the other 32-year-old running.
Yeah, he had a good game, though.
Had three catches?
Had 45 yards or
something. That's what it's come to for Frank Gore. That's
his best
game.
He's getting hit in the backfield.
By the way, he's putting up Trent Richardson production this season.
He has 3.6 yards per carry.
All right, so you're in denial right now.
No, I'm blaming it on the offensive line. You put him on a good
team.
That
sounds like denial.
He'd just be the regular 4.1, nothing crazy. You go watch that game. You haven't watched the game. He played well last
year. You know what? Don't get defensive, all right? Just because you're not going to Frank Gore's funeral.
You come at the king.
Oh, wow.
You come at the inconvenient truth.
Greg getting haircuts.
Wait, are you calling Frank Gore the king or yourself the king?
I think we know what the answer that is.
I'm saying Frank Gore.
That's not how that sounded. Weekly NFL Network hit. With Michael Silver.
Here we go.
He's getting his hair cut. I think he got his makeup done and didn't even have a TV yet yesterday.
Yeah, I'll say this is my day off, and I'm happy to come in here and do this, but the tension is uncomfortable. let's get it together and let's start with Greg having a little bit more of a generous spirit to the rest of the room starting now. Comment, Greg.
It's ridiculous. He's taking shots at Frank Gore after a great game.
Mark Sessler and Kevin Patra both took the Colts. Dan, Connor, and Chris all took the Jags. Moving forward, the San Diego Superchargers. Talk about depressing, boring teams. Are 3-9. They head to Kansas City to face the Chiefs. With all due respect to the Carolina Panthers, the hottest team in football right now, 7-5, surging into playoff favorite status. I mean, if you ask the football world right now, they would tell you that there's no way the Chiefs can miss the playoffs. And to that, I'll say, just stick around.
Cause they're locked in.
The NFL has a weird way of turning around locks. That's all I'm going to say. The Chiefs are 7-5.
Even a quarterback injury wouldn't kill him because Alex Smith's barely better than Chase Daniel.
Well, we'll see is all I'm going to say. They're 7-5, playing very well. This is the part of the reason a lot of people saying they're a lock is because their schedule is so easy. And it doesn't get much easier, I think, right now than getting San Diego in your building when you have a home field advantage like this, Wes.
Von Miller treated Phillip Rivers like a pinata last week. He was under constant attack the whole game. Von Miller was all over him. And Melvin Gordon, come on, Spice Rack. Another fumble from Melvin Gordon. This guy fumbles every time I watch him.
There's nothing special about Melvin Gordon.
It gets like 53 yards and a fumble every game. Way to go, Spice Rack.
Can you imagine the pressure on Spice Rack knowing that he missed on, let's face it, he missed on Melvin Gordon, and now he's got to, if he misses again, he's out of the game.
Well, there may be a little bit more pressure on the Chargers for missing on Melvin Gordon, but.
Well, I don't know. They said Tom Telesco, the GM, he got signed to a contract extension before the year, and it sounds like they're going to keep McCoy. So maybe there's not a lot of pressure. And I disagree. The easiest matchup in football right now is San Diego in San Diego. I think they're better. They're better on the road. Phillip Rivers had a vintage game, granted, against Jackson.
Well, he threw a pick six last week, and I don't think that game is, what, 10-3 if he doesn't?
Yeah, but even if you factor that in.
That was his fifth pick six of the year.
They were only down.
Yeah, he has the most in the league by far.
Wait, how many pick sixes?
Five. And I did not.
Philip Rivers has thrown five pick sixes.
That's what they said on the broadcast I just watched. And I don't remember all of them, but it was.
You
stunning.
Have to keep in mind, he's playing behind fourth string offensive lineman and throwing to Don.
What's
Trout
the record? Schaub had six?
I don't know.
Well, this season, I mean, the game was 17-3, and it would have been 10-3. Had that not happened.
I'm shocked to hear that.
I don't know.
Here's the thing, though. Pick sixes, we always talk about pick sixes like they're meaningful in a predictive way. And it's all just luck. Interception is an interception.
Tell Matt Schaub that, who's a punchline.
I know, but it's essentially been an amazing amount of bad luck. I just mean interceptions are one thing. If you have a bunch of pick sixes, I don't think that's like –
That's
any
fair,
way
but sometimes with some quarterbacks, like watching a lot of Browns, sometimes it's – you don't have the wherewithal. You get it tipped at the line, and there's no one to stop the defender who catches it at the line. That's not predictive, but it is bad fundamentals
and
bad.
And I would think there are coaches that would – a coach would probably tell you there are certain throws that lend themselves to be pick sixes.
I was just going to say, you've got guys who don't have strong – Phillip Rivers does not have a strong arm.
No.
Schaub has one – you're throwing out routes or sideline routes.
They're not getting it.
Without a weak arm, that's gonna lend you to a pick six.
Yeah,
the two biggest pick sixers of all time have monster arms, Brett Favre and Dan Marino. That's your top two.
But they played forever.
Throw more attempts than anyone.
Hey. just trying to throw things.
Total wormhole.
let's check in on the Dalton scale, by the way. We talked about replacing Andy Dalton in our last podcast as the prime meridian of quarterbacks. Voting is not done yet, but I will tell you that it is extremely close between Alex Smith and Ryan Tannehill are neck and neck right now. It looks like as of taping, Jay Cutler pretty far in the back and behind those two men. So we'll see, where this ends up.
Why is it so different when we look at the different polls, Daniel?
They are two different polls because they only offer one day polls. If you really want to get into it. On my off day, someone put up a poll, I believe our desk editor, David Ely, and then I was getting multiple Twitter mentions, hey, when are you putting up the poll? So I put one up this morning at like 5 a.m., and then Ely was like, oh, we already had one up. So what we're going to do is we're going to combine the two polls.
Okay, sorry.
I'm on Greg's Alex Smith train on this one.
Yeah, it's got to be Alex Smith. I mean, please, voters, Tannehill.
Several people had a decent idea that it should be renamed the Ryan Tannehscale.
It's a little cutesy, isn't it?
Is it?
A little bit. I don't know. I'm not going to say I dismiss it out of hand or anything, but don't you think it's a little bit?
I think he's been too up and down. Last year he would have been all for him. This year he's buried way below.
No, I was never on board Tannehill.
Nice and in the middle. That's what we're looking for.
Let's move on to the Tennessee Titans. 3-9, last place in the AFC now. AFC South traveling to the Meadowlands.
Rivalry game.
To face the Jets. Their Jets were also Titans at one time.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep. And so the Jets in a situation at 7-5. The Giants, listen, the Giants gave the Jets a gift, and the Jets, for once in their lifetime, accepted the gift, took care of business once it was presented, won that game to get to 7-5. And when you look at the schedule and what's going on in the AFC playoff picture, you realize that probably saved their season. So the one thing you cannot do, you cannot get what amounted to a near a miraculous win over the Giants and then choke against the Titans at home. You got to take care of business. This is a big this would reflect very poorly on Todd Bowles and that entire coaching staff if they don't have this team ready for this game. Jets should roll, and yet I'm always nervous about the Jets, and they're building in a big spot in December. Your thoughts, guys?
Which Jets defense is going to show up? Because Marcus Mariota and Carson Palmer are the only two quarterbacks in the league with three of the top 20 QBRs this year. And Marcus Mariota has done it against the Saints, the Bucks, and the Jaguars, three of the worst defenses in the league. If it's a good defense, I have no faith in the Titans' passing game weapons to help Mariota out.
Here's one thing. Darrelle Revis returned to practice on Thursday in a limited fashion, and I believe there is some positive buzz out there now that he will be back after missing two games. And, you know, there's been way too much made over the decline of Darrelle Revis. If he is, if his head is right, he's still going to be adding an excellent player to that defense, and that will make a big difference, I think. I think we're going to see Revis.
I mean, that will help a lot because in that Giants game, well, number one, Odell Beckham's speed, no one could even touch him. But Will Ty was making big plays. I mean, they're throwing the ball to everyone in that game, and they couldn't stop the pass. I give the Jets, though, and Fitzpatrick a ton of credit for – I didn't see it on Sunday, saw it later – what he did in that fourth quarter. That was a money quarter by Fitzpatrick.
Absolutely.
They're going to hang in this game.
I was waiting for you to
– Oh, I'm ready,
bring up
Greg.
The old
– I'm ready to talk about the old QB index. That maybe that's why there's tension you sense, Mark, because I'm legitimately upset with Greg Rosenthal, because not only has he betrayed me personally by putting Ryan Fitzpatrick
that's
at
a personal
number
betrayal?
20 out of 32 quarterbacks in the, quote, tier acceptable category, which is behind such luminaries as Matt Ryan, Alex Smith, Marcus Mariota, Tyrod Taylor, and Blake Bortles, and Jay Cutler, to name just a few. It seems as if you didn't see what Ryan Fitzpatrick, the much maligned Fitzpatrick that could never win in December and is never consistent, threw 51 passes in a must-win game and didn't throw a single interception, led them down the field for the win, and then the go-ahead field goal. Gutsy scrambling, as he does every week, playing the best football of his career and on pace for 30 touchdowns and 4,000 yards passing, and yet he is one of the worst quarterbacks in football, according to this paper.
Well, Ryan Tannehill is also on pace for 4,000 yards, so I think you have to watch.
But very different.
Watch the games. And
very different.
See, and you're right, I haven't watched Fitzpatrick. I mean, that's part of the thing. The whole point is I try to watch each and every game, and I usually spend most of my Fridays and Saturdays, whatever free time I don't have with the kids, I watch them then. So sometimes the ranking – I've watched about half by the time I've read this. If you're making the argument he's going to move up a little, yeah, he probably will. But you're making the big argument he needs to be a little higher. If you're arguing
absolutely.
He needs to be 18 ahead of Matt Ryan or 19 ahead of Stafford, it's like, okay, that maybe will happen after I watch this game. But Ryan Fitzpatrick's bad games have been really bad.
Not quite as bad as you seem to think.
Worse than Matt Ryan's. And you said if anyone's watching the tape, then you're not going to take Ryan over Fitzpatrick. And I agree. I disagree. Ryan's been very middle of the pack. That's
Matt
why
Ryan.
Afterwards, Matt Ryan, that is, I went to look at Pro Football Focus, who does, you know, it's nothing scientific, but they try to watch each play. They have him 8th and Fitzpatrick 22. So it made me think I'm not crazy.
No
He's
comment.
Been middle of the road. His bad games aren't as bad as Fitzpatrick's bad games. He has about 5 games this year where he really hurt the Jets. That's all.
I thought you did an excellent job with the list, but I don't think you've watched Jay Cutler play a snap this year. How is he 12th? Ahead of Tyrod Taylor, ahead of Marcus Mariota. Come on.
You should honestly.
Mariota has a really surprising stat, by the way, that's in his favor and should worry the Jets maybe in this game. He's second in the league in first downs per attempt, which is wild, which makes you think if they had a running game, he'd be much, much better.
A question about the Jets, because Connor asked this in his piece on Sunday.
I just can't believe it.
Jets
give me a break.
No, it's just, I'm sorry, Mark. Let me just, one more.
Go ahead.
Like, honestly, like, he can't, he's not, he's 10 quarterbacks worse than Jameis Winston this year. You want to talk about
Jameis
up and
Winston
down.
Jameis Winston has been outstanding.
You want to talk about up and down, Blake Bortles up and down, Jay Cutler, the epitome of up and down, Tyrod Taylor up and down.
And so is Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, but these
They're
guys
all
are
about
like,
the same.
These guys are like seven spots ahead.
He should be in the middle of the pack tier. But
absolutely.
But I think it's fair that Greg doesn't have enough time in the day to watch all these games.
I do end up watching them all. I'm in one game's not going to change that much. I'm showing Dan my little, you know, grades and graphs throughout the season. That one game is going to change Fitzpatrick's average, but not that much. It's one game out of 12.
That's impressive because, you know, you like math teachers always say, show your work. Greg is showing his
showing
work.
Showing you my
Dan.
Work.
No, you know what? And I'm not questioning Greg's, football knowledge, but I think he's a little bit like thrown
bit
off
under.
By the specter of what Ryan Fitzpatrick has been, and you're not seeing what he has been this year.
I went and examine this. I wanted to soul search. Am I being biased in any way against Fitzpatrick? What is the problem? You know what's killing him? Is September. You have, September counts just as much as the last month. In September, you have an idea that Fitzpatrick was somehow playing well, and he was terrible. From weeks 2 to 4, he had 3 straight really poor games, and they were winning, and they were doing some things that had nothing to do with him. And that's been dragging him down.
How can you be dragged down when that was about 2 months ago? I don't know.
Well, that all counts.
It's got to be coming up, charging up your list. All right. Sorry, Mark. What did you say?
Well, I was just going to ask. They're 7-5, the Jets. What would the record be without Brandon Marshall?
Oh, they would.
I think
be
he's the best. He's been amazing for them. And when you do watch the Jets game, Greg, it'll put an emphasis on that. He was money in the bank for the Jets.
That was in some ways, I almost, because I didn't know this before we started the podcast, I didn't realize you didn't see this game because this was a gutsy Fitzpatrick game. And
yeah, I'm sure he'll get bumped up off this.
And Brandon Marshall has been just an incredible player for them this year.
And Fitzpatrick, to his credit, is always going to be gutsy enough to give those guys a chance to make plays. Eric Decker's having a great year, too.
Eric Decker, no love for that guy.
Nice,
I think
nice
he's been
year.
Playing really well.
Much better in the slot. Connor Oro picks against New York teams every week, pick the Titans. The rest of us pick the Jets.
He's going to cost you guys money.
I know.
It's well, the money's going to come out of, and Connor Orr is a dear friend to us all, but the money is going to come out of Connor Orr's pocket.
Well, he's safely like 3,000 miles away. I think we're in trouble there. Moving on, the Detroit Lions, a heartbreaking loss last Thursday, a season-ending loss, let's face it, take on the St. Louis Rams, who, in addition to being a bad, bad team, they fired Detective Frank Cignetti. He told him to hand in his badge and gun, and who knows what he's up to now. And now he sent Robert Quinn to IR. Ready? I'm putting the clock on 1 minute on this game. Mark, get us going.
Well, you're talking about a team that's shutting it down, basically. I mean, there's nothing left to play
tanking?
For in St. Louis. I don't think they're tanking, but that's at their peak, they seem like a team that's tanking.
Well, it seems like Frank Cignetti lost his job because the best player on that offense was getting worse by the week, and that's Todd Gurley. And I don't even blame Gurley. He's getting less productive by the week because there's no blocking and the quarterbacks have held him back. So it sounds like Boris is charged with getting Gurley back on track.
He's been hitting the backfield so much. I mean, maybe we overhyped Gurley a bit too. I think both.
I don't think we did at all.
I think both things can possibly be true. That
I don't think Gurley is
overhyped
anyway.
20 seconds.
Well, spend it on the Lions, the better team here.
Poor Lions. I was really getting to like this team. I have never been as devastated for a game where I had no stake in it whatsoever as I was when the Lions lost that game. It really bummed
I felt
me
so
out.
Bad.
I don't know why.
I felt
it
bad
really,
for everybody
really
in Ford
me.
Field. I felt bad for the Matthew Stafford and Megatron dropping to his knees in agony. Just that team and the fan base needs a break.
I felt nothing, but I can understand that you guys had a lot invested for some reason.
All right, time now to welcome into the studio a first-time hero. That's what I like to call her. She is
hero. Huh?
Yes, she is the
come here
host
more often.
Of Around the NFL, the television program on NFL Network, the old flagship station. She is also a mother of three, and she also is potentially eating crab legs with Cal Ripken Jr. She is Ambo.
Amber. Rambo's little sister.
Theo Harris, welcome
What's
to.
What's going on?
That is an Amber Alert, guys.
You're the first to ever say that to me.
I would imagine.
It's unbelievable, really.
Nailed it.
And I've never eaten crabs with Cal Ripken. I've hung out with him, but I've never. Yeah. I was never in the back of the Orioles planes where he would, like, bring the bushel on for West Coast trips and stink up the whole plane.
Because Amber has a hit. You grew up in that region, uh-huh. The Maryland region. You did coverage of the Orioles before coming out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was post-Cal. But Cal's still my hero.
Well, and famously played by Scarlett Johansson on Saturday Night Live when they randomly did a Orioles skit.
That's right.
Which is one of the most
Whoa.
One of the craziest things I've ever
Amber
seen.
Was?
And it was weird because it was 2 years ago. Amber was already deep into her NFL Network career.
I hadn't covered an Orioles game in like 5 years. And they do the spoof and people. It was actually when the Pacquiao fight was going on. Okay. So I'm watching the Pacquiao fight. And the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and my phone's going crazy, and I'm like, what's going on? And people are mentioning Scarlett, because SNL aired at the exact same time, and I was just really disappointed they got such a dog to play me.
I mean, I was going to say, that's
pretty awesome.
It's quite a compliment.
God, she's beautiful.
That's like if like Channing Tatum played Mark Sessler in a sketch on SNL.
It's like when your wife,
good for him.
Amber might not know this, but Dan's wife is a casting director, and she said that John Hamm would play Dan in the movie about
See, that's beautiful. Your wife.
And you agree with that?
I see the resemblance.
Thank
completely.
You.
It would have been my first choice, for sure.
And Amber has just booked herself onto the show multiple weeks now. No, other way around. Amber's a big TV star, so we're happy to have her on the show. Would you like to talk some football with us?
Of course.
Maybe
of
some
course.
Other stuff as we get down the line, but let's get back into the games now. And we will start with a game in Philadelphia, a huge game for the Eagles who, you know, despite being 5-7 in the wretched NFC East, that means you're in first place or at least tied for first. So you now get a game against the Buffalo Bills in your building. And, you know, Amber, I'll start with you on this because the Bills, they've been a very schizophrenic team where they look like the team that maybe people thought they could be in August when people are picking them for the playoffs, and then they lay an egg. So their last game, they played very well, won. Does this set up well for the Eagles that you're going to have another bad Bills game now as they go up and down all season?
Quite possibly, but I think when you look at what Philadelphia is doing, they're not really scoring on offense. They're relying on everything else to score as far as special teams and defense. If they're able to, if the Eagles are able to score that way, I think they have a chance. But I don't think two games in a row you're going to see miraculous plays like the Malcolm Jenkins again this week against the Bills. I don't know about the Bills on the road. You know, Philly's, it is still a tough, hostile environment to play in. A lot of people having the Bills taking that AFC wild card spot. I don't see that happening in the end. On the flip side, I could actually see the Philadelphia Eagles winning the division just by default because I feel like everything's just going to keep falling until someone's somewhat ahead in that division.
Well, that's actually a good question because who is the favorite in the NFC East now? Is there anyone you could actually say, or is this thing literally wide open with the Cowboys, obviously, because they're on the outside looking in right now? You wouldn't put them as the favorite.
No, their offense.
Does anybody stick out?
I'd go Giants, even though I think that they could win it with six games.
I don't think there is a favorite. It's just – and if you looked at the metrics or whatever, the advanced stats and giving percentages, like they're all about even now in terms of the Redskins, Giants, and Eagles having a chance to make it. I guess I would give the Eagles an edge, but I also don't think they're suddenly playing better just because they had a fluky game, as Amber said, where special teams and defense scores a ton of touchdowns. The Bills, to me – they're consistent right now on offense. They go into Kansas City, and Tyrod Taylor completed a lot of passes down the field and looked very good. Last week against Houston, who Chris had been talking up as the best defense in the league at the moment, they dropped 30 points on him. They're a tough team to prepare for, and it wasn't all just the running game, although they didn't have to have Tyrod Taylor throw the ball. When he needed to throw it deep, I mean, he's completing big-time passes down the field. I trust them a lot more than I trust the Eagles.
53-yarder and a 52-yarder to Watkins. They've had big plays all year. They're amongst the best team when it comes to big plays from wire to wire. Greg Roman deserves attention for that. But it's Sammy Watkins who's been involved of late. And that hit, the pass to Clay at the end of the game. And I do think that Houston has a good secondary. But there was no one within 15 yards of Charles Clay on what decided the game.
Remember Clay in the movie JFK?
Yes, I do.
Couldn't trust that guy.
No, he was Clay Shaw, Clay Bannister.
Clay Shaw. Yeah.
Yeah. He had multiple Mark, aliases. Well,
you might not know, Amber, by the way, that Mark is a JFK conspiracy
expert. That is
expert.
Not true.
What?
I am not an expert.
You were, because you started writing a book.
Well, I got 10 pages into it, so.
Still, that's
that was in 1991.
10 pages further than
I've
ever got.
Anyone.
Yeah. 1991, when you were listening to Go West.
You're pretty much an everything conspiracist, though. It's not just JFK.
Also, completely false.
He's a big Go West fan. Pretty
yeah, I don't know. You know, at this point, why did I come here today?
Well,
I'm trying to remember why I think you're.
But we haven't even brought up the fact that do you guys think that LeSean McCoy is going to have a big game just fueled by everything
wouldn't
that's happening?
I want him to go away so much.
Why?
Just go away, LeSean McCoy, you awful human being.
Wait, are you on Chip Kelly's side of this fence?
No, I just think LeSean McCoy, he showed himself to be an awful human being in the offseason a couple of times. Once when he treated reporters like they were something he picked off the bottom of his shoe. And then with
that's
the party.
That's half the league.
Now, LeSean McCoy, you could see disdain in his face as he talked down to other human beings. And then the party where only invited women can come and he's going to dress them.
Mm.
That's disgusting.
I think he'll have a big game, not because he's specially motivated. I mean, we talked about it the last show. It was funny how he's trying to get his teammates all fired up because he cares more this week. But because he's one of the best running backs in the league, because he's much better than DeMarco Murray is right now, and because he's got a good offensive line. I mean, Rex Ryan made the statement this week, Richie Incognito might be the best run-blocking guard in the entire NFL, and that's not that crazy a statement.
It
would have shocked you to hear that going into the season, and it's not that crazy a statement now.
I was the only one of the group to pick the Bills. I was surprised.
What?
That was a good hero pick for the old Zeuser, I believe.
Well, that could change.
To me, a loser-goes-home match for the Bills, at least.
Question.
You're
yeah.
done. If they fall 6-7 in that playoff picture, they're done.
So but not for the Eagles.
Not for the Eagles. The Eagles are still alive.
Everybody might
they lose.
Continue to lose.
They could
division.
Go 1-3 and win the division.
So, and you're going to win that one. That's a hero.
I hope so, because I do think the Bills will falter down the line when everyone thinks they're going to win, but I think they're going to take care of business today.
Yeah.
We shall see. Let's move on, ladies and gentlemen, to the Seattle Seahawks. They look like the Seahawks again, and now they are traveling to Baltimore. They get a Ravens team that is not very good, as we know. 4-8, they got Matt Schaub at quarterback, who is a pick-six machine.
If they're lucky.
If they're lucky.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they don't have anybody healthy left on the entire roster.
This, Greg, on paper looks like a blowout for the Seattle Seahawks.
How unlucky is Jimmy Clausen? Because as we're taping this Thursday afternoon, it looks like there's a good chance Jimmy Clausen is going to get the start. And the last time we saw Jimmy Clausen, of course, was also against the Seahawks.
That's right.
And they didn't score a point.
That was
and they punted every single time they had the ball. I mean, and it's an impossible spot. And we had a very quick, stupid
Well, a punt's
argument.
Better than an interception, so I guess that's what they're considering right now, Ravens.
We had a stupid argument downstairs, and they were like, well, what's the difference between Matt Schaub and Jimmy Clausen? And I would argue there actually is a pretty big difference because Jimmy Clausen just joined the team a few weeks ago. And Matt Schaub, as bad as he's been in terms of the pick sixes, those have been tipped passes. He's looked like an NFL quarterback, not a good NFL quarterback. Jimmy Clausen, I think, gives you no chance to move the ball at all. Not that it really matters.
If you had a draft of the worst quarterbacks of the last 3 years, those would probably be the top two draft picks, Matt Schaub and Jimmy Clausen.
That's fair.
And
he's gonna have to be put on the spot if they play the way they did against Adrian Peterson. I mean, they gang tackled him over and over.
Amber, do you like keep closer tabs on the Ravens still, even though
I usually
dreadful?
Do. I usually do.
Are you a Ravens fan?
Well, I grew up a Redskins fan.
Okay.
In the D.C. area, but that's because we didn't have the Colts in town. They left when I was really small. But my whole family was Redskins fans. But when I started covering sports as a professional, and I covered both the Redskins and the Ravens, it really kind of swayed my opinion, just based on the way the two organizations were run. I started in the late '90s when Dan Snyder had just bought the team. and you know, just being a young journalist, one of my first
a hungry young journalist,
and one of my first experiences was seeing Dan kick like a whole section of the media out of the facility, and I was like, what does this? Can that happen? Aren't you allowed to cover the team? Can you even just
that's your
do
hero,
that?
Wesling?
Can you do that?
what?
And on the other end,
I remember
you know,
that. I remember
do you remember that?
That?
It was a big that I was there. Was that was like story. One of my first days working
wow.
in media. And it was Rennie Knott in Channel 7. Yeah, he kicked them all off. Yeah. But on the other hand, Steve Bisciotti, you know, in that organization with Ozzie Newsome from top to bottom, I was with them even closer than the Redskins for 9 years. And so, yeah, I saw all those guys get drafted, saw them come in as young guys, Joe Flacco and Haloti Ngata. And, I mean, gosh, I was even back when Terrell Suggs was first drafted. So, yeah, I keep a little bit closer
another
tabs
peach.
On them. Another peach of a human yeah. being.
I like it. Amber comes on here and starts
oh, she keeps
dishing.
It
anti-
I love that. Yeah. I hold in my hands the 2015 season Week 14 research notes.
Wait, is that Pretty Woman also?
Yes, it rocks that.
Yep. Yes.
All right, I see where we're going with this.
We should move on to another game, but I need to share this about Thomas Rawls, who deserves the spotlight. He's taken over for Marshawn Lynch, as we know, has not – skipped a beat, 712 yards rushing, setting a new NFL record for an undrafted player in his first six starts. You have to go back to Arian Foster in 2010 for someone that approaches that, but he doesn't even have Rawls beat. Rawls is the real deal. What a move
well,
by
is,
the
this is
Seattle
the
Seahawks.
Yeah, this is the difference between the Seahawks of the last couple of years and this year's Seahawks is that they always had beast mode and they had that defense, and Russell Wilson was good, but now they've got Russell Wilson who can throw four or five touchdowns a game. And they've got Rawls, they've got the running game, and then we've seen the defense playing well as well. So I think it's next to the Cardinals, maybe the most dangerous team in the NFC right now.
Interesting. We all took the Seahawks across the board. Let's move on to the New Orleans Saints. The New Orleans Saints heading to Tampa to face the Buccaneers. The Saints are out of the mix at 4-8, but the Buccaneers are frisky, 6-6. They got an exciting young quarterback. They have a real chance to make a move here in the NFC if they take care of business at home. Mark Sessler, your thoughts? You think the Buccaneers are going to seize this moment to build some momentum?
I do. I think the Bucs could, looking at their schedule, go about 3-1 down the stretch. I don't know if they'll get into the playoffs, but this is a team that, if you've been a Bucs fan, you've suffered through a lot. There is a lot of reasons for hope. And watching that Falcons game from last week, I couldn't help but wonder if Matt Ryan looked across the sideline at Dirk Cotter and just said, I want that offense back. Because that fit the Falcons, and it certainly fits the Bucs. And Winston is the perfect quarterback for what they're doing, because maybe he just doesn't even know what he doesn't know at this point, but he's not afraid to take shots down the field. He's got the perfect two wide receivers for it. And Doug Martin takes a lot of pressure off him as well. I really think that the Bucs, there's nothing fluky about them. I think that it took them a month to figure out what they were, and now they are an interesting team.
When I watched that game, the thought occurred to me, there's no better Mr. Inside and Mr. Outside than Doug Martin and Charles Sims right now in the NFL. Mm. Charles Sims looks really quick. He can't be used like Doug Martin, but as a pass catching back and a scat back outside, he's been great.
I mean, they may be the best running back duo in the league. At least it's top five, and Sims has been doing that all year, but it's been more and more of it.
The schedule favors them for sure.
They yes,
have
it
the Saints,
does.
The Rams, the Bears, and the Panthers. So that would be three.
And it
one.
May be the Panthers sitting players.
It might be, exactly. So they're at the least 3-1. That's
so.
9-7. And then who are they competing with for the wild card right now? You assume that the Seahawks get the first wild card spot. And then the second one is probably going to come down to the Bucs or the Vikings. And the Vikings have a pretty tough schedule. All the way down
we
the line.
We talked about
they
that
play the
last
Packers
show.
In the divisional matchup week 17. So let's say they both – when I was looking at the Vikings schedule, I think they go 1-3.
Woo!
But that would put both teams at 9-7. So that's where it gets interesting, because then it comes to they didn't play head-to-head, so a bunch of different tiebreakers conference.
Yeah.
If you want to play along with Amber, you can go to NFL.com and use our playoff predictor.
Wow.
Look at you, company man. Oh. Christmas.
I love it.
You get three drink tickets at the Christmas.
Yes!
Party.
Oh, yeah. Mission accomplished.
And a plus one.
Wes famously.
That's like, oh, let's not get crazy, Amber.
Don't get crazy. No, nobody gets a plus one.
And Wes famously skipped it last year because he didn't like the line in the invitation that said you had to be I don't know. It's
cocktail attire.
Cocktail attire. Yeah, that,
and he was screw that.
I'm out on cocktail
I'm not doing cocktail attire.
I got well, better things to do. People out there like guys showing up in shorts and on skateboards.
Right. I got better things to do than dress up in cocktail attire.
I can promise you the drink tickets or the limited amount of drink tickets have never stopped us at any holiday party.
Never.
On any level.
You got to know the right people.
I can always find me another drink ticket somehow, but I'll be damned if I'm going to pay $5.50 for a cocktail at a Christmas party.
There you go. Amber Theo Harris. Wait, is it Amber Theo Harris, or is it Amber Theo Harris?
Theo Harris. It's one word. Harris. It's one word, Theo Harris.
Theo Harris.
It's Amber Theo Harris. It's Greek.
Mm. Oh,
but,
right.
You know, you Americans.
I knew there was something
you
different.
You people say yeah. Theo Harris.
Okay, before we all took the Bucks to take care of business, Amber, before you go, I wanted to check in. We just heard Roxette, of course. one of the great anthems of 1990.
Really?
Also was Chris Wessling's. Pick for embarrassing album/single of his past that he purchased. Amber, I am curious what your most embarrassing purchase. Listen, this is like I said on the last show, this is a no shame area.
This is no shame.
You're in the trust tree. No one will mock you.
We Circle just
this is, a, this is a place of, to share our past. Most embarrassing purchase musically.
Okay, you guys hit me with this a little earlier. I had a little time to think. I would have to go back.
Don't pull back
to,
the curtain.
I would have to go back to like 1990, 91, I'm going to guess.
Good era for this.
It was, well, I said, you have to realize I was an adolescent girl in the 80s, early 90s. I have a lot of embarrassing music. But I remember buying for my little boyfriend in sixth grade, Sam. I can't even remember your last name, Sam. I apologize. You were really important to me, though.
He's a big listener.
Milli Vanilli's. Ooh. Baby, don't forget my number. And I like, and it was a, uh-oh.
I like this.
Didn't they do
too.
Like a, in the video?
Yes, absolutely.
Like together?
Well, remember? That's all they did. That
yeah,
was their
that
thing.
Was all they did. It
with
was
like floating objects in the sky behind them.
Exactly, with the braids, and the braids and would like sway. Yep. Yeah,
I don't think you're that embarrassed about it by
kinda,
your reaction.
I kind of like it right now.
Amber is dancing to it. She's loving it.
I kind of jamming right now.
Yeah. And
it wasn't a bad song.
Not at
no,
all.
No, for our younger
if
listeners,
they had sang
too.
It.
Because when we were downstairs.
Pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
When we were downstairs in the video editing room where Sydney was cutting that song, Sydney, for one, who's a young woman born in the early 90s, and several other of the producers did not know who Milli Vanilli was.
Yeah, they said, no. How do you spell that?
Yeah.
When I said it's Milli Vanilli.
And those that don't know Milli Vanilli was a fraud. They were put together by some record label honcho and then were exposed. They didn't sing their own songs. They're basically just
and
model
one of
dancers.
Them, I mean, it was like they fell apart from there. They got really involved in drugs, and I think one of them died. They OD'd.
Well, there was
I mean,
a lot of
crazy.
Embarrassment. You know, this has been recorded in, like, VH1 specials.
I
owned that album, too, and I proudly owned it, to be honest. But I had a lot of terrible music that's been exposed.
Maybe you knew my boyfriend Sam.
What's his
whoever
name?
His name was
Sam. You're a bum.
Sam is listening to just a tear going.
He lives under a bridge.
The one that got away.
And I remember wrapping the single cassette. Remember the single? You went to Sam Goody or whatever, and you bought the single cassette, and I wrapped it and put it in his locker in sixth grade. Shout out,
you were a good girlfriend.
Hotel Nights, middle school.
And somehow the love didn't last.
No, it didn't.
Amber, again, is the host of Around the NFL, the television program, which you can find 5 times a week. Check your local listings. I'm not even going to give the time.
Congrats.
I'm dropping the check local
congrats,
listings.
By the way, you guys, on being listed as one of the top 10 sportscasts on Awful Announcing. Have you even brought that up? I mean, has that been brought up on this?
Listen, once we get to know each other better, you'll know that we bring up anything positive immediately about ourselves. Came up on the last show in real time.
That's how it came about that I got on the podcast. We were in makeup, Greg and I, together.
Oh, not surprising.
We're in makeup, and this came up, and I was like, hey.
Was Greg
congrats.
Getting his haircut?
I did not bring
Thank
it up
you, Amber.
For the record.
Greg wasn't even
Adam
on camera
Rank.
Yesterday. He
Adam
just gets
Rank.
Makeup
Adam
now.
Rank
I don't recall it happening that way, but as you were getting powdered, you said, hey, have you guys seen how great
you
are? Yeah, that's how it started.
That checks out.
That sounds accurate to me.
Congrats, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Amber. So Amber Theo Harris. No, Amber Theo Harris. Is that it?
Opa!
Something like that. We'd love to have you back on again.
Yeah, everybody do Uzo.
Okay, thank you, Amber. Let's move on now. The Oakland Raiders, we see them traveling to Denver to face the Broncos. The Raiders, one, you know, another season of promise. This was the first season of promise in a while, but it looks like it's ending in a negative way. But maybe they can, you know, end on a strong note. They're 5-7. They go to Denver. They can knock off the Broncos and Brock Osweiler. Greg, I will say this. You know, Denver took care of business against San Diego last week, but I could see Osweiler costing them games or putting them in bad spots. He's a young quarterback, hasn't looked great.
He struggled last week, and that got overlooked because they won, and that's fine. But their running game right now is banged up, and I think this – I just have a Spidey sense feeling on this game. It was my bold prediction and our headline of the future on NFL Now that I think the Raiders are going to go in there and win this game and bounce back from what was Derek Carr's worst game of the year.
I don't even know who I picked, but I could see that. I mean, Oakland has lost 4 of 5, but they still have – they're still making plays week to week. And Osweiler missed a bunch of throws in that last game. And I don't know, is C.J. Anderson going to play?
The Kubiak said he expects Hillman and Anderson to both return to practice by Friday, but Juwan Thompson might get the start.
Thompson is not bad.
He's not bad. No. And Osweiler did miss some throws, but they just jumped out to a lead and ran the ball their second half.
Yeah, yep, that's fair too.
They just sat on the ball. And DeMarcus Ware is supposed to come back this week. To a defense that really shut down the Chargers, played lights out last week, I would be surprised by an upset.
Michael Crabtree got a big contract this week. Turned out to be a really nice signing for him, and he got rewarded. I think he's going to get $16 million or so.
$19 million guaranteed.
Yeah, I think it's $16 over the first 2 years. So that was a good buy low by Reggie McKenzie. And they have a nice group there with Cooper, Crabtree, and Seth Roberts. If you didn't know he was an undrafted rookie, you would think, wow, this guy's got a great future in the league as a third. I mean, he makes some tough plays.
The best thing going for Reggie McKenzie right now is that he doesn't have to touch the offensive side of the ball at all in the offseason. You've got your nucleus. You've got a good offensive line. You've got a running back. You've got receivers. You've got Clive Walford at tight end. Go get some pieces to help Khalil Mack on defense. Mm.
You got to love Michael Crabtree, your classic riches to rags to riches story.
Right. Yeah.
Would we really be worrying
about Cooper and the drops? Because every time I watch a Raiders game, he has one or two that kill the team.
No, yeah. Because I think you should worry, because that's what everyone said with him coming out of college was a concern. Then again, T.O., I mean, right. who dropped more passes than T.O.?
Yeah.
If he drops 8 a year and has 100 catches, he'll take it.
Mike Evans is dropping more passes than Amari Cooper, and he's another
guy. I mean, it hurts his value. It makes him not as good a player, I guess. Obvious. I mean, it maybe prevents him from being the very top of the top.
He's not Odell Beckham.
The entire around the NFL team took the Broncos. Moving on, the Dallas Cowboys, who are miraculously one game out in the NFC East after their Monday night win over the Redskins, travel to Lambeau Field and get the Packers. You know, at first glance, this is a absolute blowout and wait. But then you think about what's going on with the Packers, that they've lost 2 straight in Lambeau, which this does not happen typically. And they had no business winning last Thursday night. So the difference in a 61-yard Hail Mary is 7-5 in the Packers in a total free fall instead of 8-4. First place, everyone thinks everything's okay with Green Bay, but it's not. They're still the same team that's struggling to score points and hasn't even been dominant at home, right, Wes?
Randall Cobb, 4 catches, 46 yards is what he's averaging over his last 9 games.
It's amazing.
And he's paid $10 million a year. Neither Cobb nor Adams has a 100-yard game in the last 10 games, and Adams is getting the targets to do it. So, I mean, these guys, the receivers are still killing Aaron Rodgers.
What is wrong with Randall Cobb? Why? I know he's not a pure number one, but what are they doing to make him a jag, another guy?
I've learned over the years that skill position players, and probably all NFL players, do not play well through shoulder injuries. And he had one, in late August. He's been playing through it all year. You're probably afraid to get hit a little bit. And I think he's gotten a lot more defensive attention without Jordy Nelson there, and he's not the type – he's a slot receiver. It's why slot receivers don't get paid big money. They don't handle double teams.
And the offense was looking a little better when, in the beginning of the season, James Jones was looking rejuvenated, and you thought, wow, you know, he just slides in, and Aaron Rodgers is so good, he can make him a Pro Bowler again. But that obviously didn't happen. They're lacking weapons.
And it's weird to say that about Green Bay because, you know, when they re-signed Cobb, we thought that was an absolute – quintessential Green Bay move, where it's going to be great for Cobb's career. But losing Nelson, and I thought we all thought Green Bay could still be successful without Nelson, but that indirectly impacts the other receivers and moves everyone up a notch higher than they should be. And Cobb is not a he's not a, like a from the mold number one wideout.
Well, they're a mess. I mean, they're playing Crockett in a big game against Detroit. I'm forgetting his first name right now.
Davey.
It's his first game ever for the Packers. You've got your overweight and under-motivated starting running back who's been the key to your offense or on some level late in the season on the bench. That's been a problem. They had 78 yards in the first half against Detroit. They did have a good comeback. I think they should be they were in a tough spot there, and their defense is what really won them that game by getting a lot of stops. I mean, there were so many possessions in that game, and I think their defense will be good enough to dominate Matt Castle and the Cowboys, and ultimately, whatever the offense does, I think they can do it. The defense can do enough to win.
It also helps when the opposing coach on the final play is preparing his defense for a lateral, not a Hail Mary. So
I mean, oh my gosh, I still can't believe that happened. That they threw a lateral to Rodgers with no time left on the clock, and he's 80 yards away, and they wind up winning that game. It's just
one of the craziest things that's ever happened at the end of a football game. And it's going to cost Jim Caldwell's job potentially. I mean, I think he had a chance to save it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that it all went out the window there. Davey Crockett.
I mean, the same problem they have every week, which is nothing is on nothing is as planned in their offense. Their only plays are Aaron Rodgers backs up, runs around, and tries to improvise. It's basically what everyone says Russell Wilson does. That's what Aaron Rodgers does now.
So that's on the play caller.
Yeah, it's on the scheme and the play caller a lot.
Cooter's okay, though.
Well, it's Cooter time.
Cooter's fine until Jim Caldwell's sent packing, and then we'll see what happens to Cooter.
We all took the Packers to take care of business, but we've been doing that a lot in the last 6 weeks, and it hasn't always played out that way. We'll see what happens. Moving on, the New England Patriots. And they travel to Houston to face the Texans. And you know, you talk about your throne of ease, Greg. Only the Patriots can get the Texans.
Oh, please.
And, you know, 3 days before the game, J.J. Watt breaks his hand. I mean, come on. The greatest defensive player of a generation breaks his hand 3 days before he gets the Patriots. You almost think that somehow Bill Belichick's involved. you know.
You do. I don't think Greg does.
Apparently.
The other 31 owners do.
Apparently, J.J. Watt says he's going to play, but he doesn't know. He doesn't know what he can do. He just broke his hand. So the Patriots in a good spot there, because if Watt doesn't play,
he'll be
Texans
fine.
Have no chance.
He's J.J. Watt. It's all some WWE-style narrative they've contrived just to make J.J. Watt a bigger star. How about that for a conspiracy?
Well, I kind of like that, too.
I can see J.J. Watt doing that. And then yeah. When he wins the game, like with a club, they'll be selling the club afterwards on HoustonTexans.com or something.
Yeah, I could see the Texans, like, social media handler, like some 24-year-old out of Baylor being like, oh, man, this club really clubbed the competition. Not even a good tweet. At least give do a good like a good tweet would be nice.
Come on, team site.
You know what I'm not looking forward to? A close Texans Patriots game and watching the ending with you clowns up here in the studio.
Oh, you're saying you don't like your team suffering in front of an entire newsroom
exactly.
Of jabbers,
well, it's
jokesters.
A little different in this room, and we're all just like,
uh-huh,
we're not watching.
I know.
That game.
Well,
Mark
no one
doesn't know about that
the
because
Browns.
The Browns don't play on Sunday nights.
First of all, Wes and Mark are bandwagon Patriots fans.
That's true.
Carry in that water.
And I'm just kidding. I don't like it because he can't.
And I'll be rooting for the Patriots, too. I don't want the Texans to win 10 games.
All right. There we go.
Right?
But you want them to win the South.
Really? You would really?
Yes. It's tricky.
They are the best team in that division.
You don't have to worry about – despite what Greg says, you do not have to worry about the AFC South in the wild card picture.
So I'm assuming the Colts are just going to fall out of –
Yes. The Colts are a bad, bad football team.
I'm going to show some rare confidence. You know, sometimes you say I underplay them. I think they'll respond. Gronkowski's back at practice on Thursday. They're getting a little healthier. I think they'll be fed up.
Is Gronk going to play?
We don't know that. I mean, obviously, that's a huge,
Wes,
huge factor.
You took the Texans, a hero pick.
I took the Texans before I knew about Watt's broken hand and Gronk's return to practice. I may change this pick Sunday morning, depending. Okay.
I wonder if we might finally get like a breakout game from Clowney. Because they've
He's
been doing
well.
Things. Yeah, and they're putting like Watt next to him. And suddenly the offensive line is wondering, what on earth do we do with this? Clowney got to the quarterback last week, and Brady's been getting hit.
I'm looking at the game against the Bills. He was really coming on in that Bills game too. Yeah. Not just especially against the run, he's been really good.
I'm wondering
if Brian Hoyer was the Jets quarterback, you would be telling me he's ranked too low in the QB index. I mean, that's the thing.
Well, Brian Hoyer's been playing well.
That's what I mean.
No, Ryan Fitzpatrick's better.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Last thought in this game: catch a pass, Brandon LaFell.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yes,
killing Tom Brady, who's playing well still.
Not well enough to be number one on the QB index.
No, Carson Palmer took it over. He's just been too good.
Hmm. And finally, we move on to Monday Night Football. The New York Giants, 5-7, tied for first in the NFC East, but they'll have a much better idea what's going on by the time they take the field in Miami to face the Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill, a finalist in the Dalton Scale Redux, will have the primetime stage with John Gruden. I can imagine the Giants. This is how I picture this. I think the Giants win the game, and I can imagine 3 hours of John Gruden just dissecting all the things that's wrong with Ryan Tannehill right now.
That's how I picture. That sounds fun. Sounds like a good way to spend 3 hours.
With a game-winning sack by JPP.
And I'll take – ooh, I like that. Speaking of coming on, he looked more like JPP against the Jets. I will also say this. I said this on our NFL Now hit. When the smoke clears at the end of week 14, the Giants will be alone atop the NFC East. Everyone else is going to lose.
Hmm.
We'll see if that works.
Didn't you also say Tom Coughlin may have lost his job last week?
Nothing makes sense in the NFC East, so yes, I said that too.
If anybody here wants to cover this game, it's all you.
You're the Monday night guy. You're saying you would give up the chance.
I have a glazed over look in my eye picturing watching this Giants backfield for four quarters.
It's really bad.
It's like the four Boersmen.
Yeah, the Dolphins are a tough watch. I think the Dolphins are an even tougher watch right now.
Well, I'm trying to think, what is it that attracts us to the Miami Dolphins if you're going to saddle up and watch this game somewhere? I can't think of too many things, or even one thing.
Zero.
It's the NFL. You know, fun things happen, but yeah.
It could be a close game.
That's not Dolphins specific, but that's fair.
That's it. Devontae Parker's been better.
All right.
Touchdown and back-to-back game.
Playing.
All right. I'll buy that.
Fergie.
I still have a hope that Tannehill will climb out of it, but he just never has. He hasn't shown that.
How about Dan Campbell's ripped upper body?
Yeah.
That works out. But if I want to see someone jacked, I'll just FaceTime, you know, Patra.
That's true. You could get that done during the day. You don't spend your whole night with
sit in front
I'd
of
love to
TV
see the reaction from Patra when he sees his phone and it says Dan Hansis would like to FaceTime.
Yeah.
What the? And it's just, what is this?
It's just like
feels like a butt dial.
Like a scary-eyed look. Zeus are looking all thirsty.
All right, that will be fine. I think we've heard enough.
The Giants across the board selected to win this game, so we'll see what happens with that.
Oh, yeah, please do it so we can get the Dolphins back off the in-the-hunt graphic on television, please.
That's a disgrace.
They put them back on with 5-7.
That's a disgrace. All right, so that is it for the Thursday preview. We will have all these games, with the exception of that last game we just talked about, on the docket on Sunday night when we recap all of the Week 14 Sunday action. So make sure you come back for that. We're also on Sunday on YouTube and NFL Now. That's our one video show a week. So for now anyway, because we will continue to grow as an entity, that is our solemn promise.
We're going to take this network over.
You know, awful announcing puts us in their top 10 sports podcasts. Got to get up to number one. That's now on my list of goals. Move up that list. Get a TV show on NFL Network. Get paid. Get some big money. Talking millions.
The mics are still on here, Dan.
Oh, I thought, okay, that's right. No, just continue to grow the show. That's the goal moving forward. Thank you for everyone for listening. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. Thanks for coming in, buddy.
Sure.
Mailman, the boss. La Seed behind the glass. You're okay. Till Sunday.
Hi. Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Dameshek here. Make sure you listen to the Dave Dameshek football program as we preview week 14 with the great Matt Money Smith on NFL.com/podcasts and iTunes.